Welcome back to yet another sparkling and fine edition of the Two Mics on the Record podcast. You can get it twice a week. It's now available on Spotify, by the way.
Cheers.
For all of the other ways you can get it, you get it on iTunes. You can also download it on Podcast Addict, Podbean, all sorts of other Android platforms. But the most exciting thing is it's now on Spotify, so you can go and get it there. Mr. Mike Parry is here with me.
Of course I am.
We've got lots to talk about. Between now and about the next half hour or so.
Indeed. I'm so excited at the report I've seen today.
Right.
And it's a report on how various nations respond to the wealth of people within their society. We are intensely relaxed about people getting filthy rich as long as they pay all their taxes. Now, who said that?
You mean we as a nation?
We as a nation.
We are intensely relaxed as long as they pay
all their
taxes.
It was Peter Mandelson, right?
Oh, was it?
It was after New Labour got in, and all the rich in this country said they're going to clobber us with big taxes and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And Tony Blair was like New Labour and all that. Yes, Peter Mandelson put the message out, okay? And so,
Well, he had a very interesting relationship with his finances, didn't he? Because Peter Mandelson, of course, was discovered to have taken a large loan.
That's right.
From Jeffrey, what was his name?
The guy who ran New Statesman magazine and didn't declare
it. Who was a sort of massively wealthy millionaire.
That's right, large loan to buy a house.
Yeah.
A bit later on, Peter Mandelson was found to have inappropriately intervened in some passport applications for the, was it the Kuja brothers?
The Hindu Jars, wasn't
Hindu
it?
Jars, that's right, yeah, that's right, yeah. But anyway, the point of my story is that some guy in Germany now has done a study that suggests a clear majority of Britons actually go along with Mandelson's view of intensely relaxed about the rich, and that we in this country, in the Great Britain, in the United Kingdom, are more acceptable of people who make vast amounts of money than anywhere else in Europe, where envy, malice, and regret stalks those who don't have great amounts of money.
That's interesting, you know, because maybe that's why we are so popular as a destination for very wealthy people.
Exactly.
Because we have got more wealthy people, I think, in this country from other countries than anywhere else in the world.
You see, I think this is brilliant.
Well, I'm not sure.
It is brilliant because I've said to you, I know exactly how economics works, and trickle-down economics is the path to prosperity.
No, it's not.
It is.
Rubbish.
Because if I own a number of houses, I need a number of cleaners to clean them.
Yeah, but that's
if I own a number of cars,
wages.
I need a number of people to clean those cars.
These are slave wages you're talking about.
That's if I have a number of gardens, I need gardeners to garden my gardens.
And when was the last time you had a garden?
It doesn't matter. If I did have, I would have.
Yeah, but you don't have, so you're not employing any gardeners, are you?
I employ car cleaners. I employ...
You don't?
I do. No. I employ house cleaners.
You do not employ car cleaners,
Oh, so when I go and get my car cleaned, where somebody charges me £8.50 to clean my car, is that not a car cleaner?
Well, cheapskate.
I could pay up to £25 if I wanted.
Why would you only pay £8.50?
Because I won't let anybody in my car. They only clean the outside. Okay?
Why not?
Because I'm not having people putting filthy oily rags in my car.
They don't put oily rags.
Of course they do.
No.
They say, I'm going to clean the inside
the
of
your
car, sir.
Well.
So some filthy rags been in somebody else's car. Right. Get lost. I clean
so
the inside.
You clean your own car?
I clean the inside
That's
of my
pathetic.
Own car.
When do you do that?
I do that when I feel like it.
How often?
Maybe once every 2 weeks.
You
or
clean
like
your
that.
Own
yes,
car?
Yes, I
what
do.
What a pathetic specimen you are.
I've got a lemon spray in the boot. With
That's
a,
shocking.
With a, you
that
know,
is shocking.
One of those blue cloths, what they're called.
J-cloth.
J-cloth, and I clean the inside of my car
myself.
You should
get one of those cloths, that the you know, the very expensive, well, not the very expensive ones, but the ones that they've been trying to sell
on
eBay.
Ones.
No, do you remember these ones that went nuts?
No.
They're called something like minky cloths. And they're supposed to be the best cloth.
Sound manky to
Minky.
Me.
No, they're supposed to be the best cloth ever, right?
Yeah.
And they're endorsed by one of these Instagram influencers,
right?
This
right.
woman.
Right.
And because she's got about 1.6 million followers,
yes.
people have been buying these cloths.
Brilliant.
In absolute, you know, crazy numbers.
That's something I want to talk to you
and
about.
And Morrison's, right, your favourite shop, ran out of them.
Really?
And actually decided that when they got a new stock in, if you went to go and buy one, you could only buy one or two. Because there's a black market for them. There's people selling on eBay for 500 quid.
Tray and tesserons.
What?
Tray and tesserons.
Why are you saying French words to me?
Well, because I sometimes speak French words.
Right.
Now, what I was going to say is...
But my point is you don't employ the person that cleans your car.
Yeah.
You give them a fee for which they do a piece of work. That does not mean you employ them.
Well, they wouldn't be a car cleaning business unless people went along and got their cars
you're not
clean.
Employing them. It's like you're giving.
No,
it's like you're renting.
You don't understand.
All right, well,
let me tell you this, right?
Yeah. If you get in a black cab, are you employing the black cab driver?
Of course you are.
No, you're not.
Of course you are.
Well, I don't think he'd agree with that.
Well, of course you are employed him because if you didn't get in the back of the car,
well, then
you better
pay some national insurance for him.
No, 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 don't be ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? Trickle down economics. Now, Rainer Zittelmann.
This is Rainer?
Rainer.
Like Rainer's, Jay Rainer.
Eh?
Like J. Rainer?
No, R-A-I-N-E-R, gentlemen. Economic historian in Berlin commissioned the poll of 4,000 people in Britain, the US, France and Germany. Overall, Britons displayed the lowest level of social envy. And this is what I love.
Yeah.
So in this country...
Well, you're envious of people.
I'm not envious of people.
Are.
No, I'm not.
You see people with more than you don't like it.
It spurs me on to try harder to get what they've got.
Right.
That's not social envy,
so
that's ambition.
With people who are much wealthier than you...
I like
you
mixing feel, with wealthy people.
You feel inadequate, don't you?
I feel good amongst rich people.
So like when we're hanging about with Simon Jordan, for example, you feel inadequate.
No, I don't.
Well, he's richer than you are.
Well, he never looks richer than me.
Well, he does. He looks a lot richer than you.
No, he's got an all right sort of car.
He's got a Maserati.
Yeah, well, anybody could have a Maserati these days.
A lot more expensive than your car.
No, rubbish. I could get a Maserati. In fact, I might get a Maserati.
Why don't you then?
I might. Well, I might.
Why don't you?
I might.
What sort of Maserati are you going to get?
I'd get a two-door fastback sports.
You couldn't get into
that. Yes, I could.
No, you couldn't.
And, you know, Simon is a very successful man and a good pal. Got time for him, but I don't envy him.
No.
1 in 5 agree with the statement that the super rich, this is British people, 1 in 5 British people agreed with the statement that the super rich, who always want more power, are to blame for many of the world's problems. However, that figure jumps to between 30 and 35% in America, France, and Germany.
See, that doesn't surprise me.
How
about
that?
That doesn't surprise me.
But you know what's amazing?
You know what's interesting about this country, right?
Yeah.
You and I both grew up here.
Yeah.
Right? We've lived here in various different guises, with money, without money.
Yeah.
Making good money, making okay money.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of very rich people now who live, particularly in London.
Yeah.
I'm talking about lawyers, you know, people working in the city.
Yes.
People who are making in excess of what I would say is around about £300,000 a year.
Well, in excess of $1 million, a lot of people are
making. Yeah, but there's always been people making in excess of $1 million.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is there's a lot of what I regard as ordinary people.
Yeah.
See, I remember the days when I first started working in Fleet Street, a little bit after you.
Yeah.
The salaries of good... and sort of, you know, well-paid, say, columnists and well-paid lawyers and in some ways well-paid footballers were around about the same.
Yes.
Right?
Well, funny you should say that, because when I first arrived in London, I bought a flat in Palmer's Green for £29,500,
right,
which was worth £10,000. No, it wasn't. This is the whole point.
Palmer's Green, horrible.
No, Palmer's Green, on the roundabout, the Cambridge roundabout, right?
Nice
on the Cambridge Road. No, it was all right, it was fine.
Really?
But the point I'm making is, and that was £10,000 more than the house I'd sold in Manchester to move down to London.
Yeah.
But in the flat above me, Liam Brady lived.
Oh, yeah.
So a well-paid young reporter in Fleet Street wasn't that far away from the earning capability of a footballer, an international footballer playing for Arsenal.
Exactly.
Which is amazing.
But this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But at some point or other, I would say maybe in the 80s, that gap started to widen, and lawyers started to get paid a fuckload of money, you know, to the point where they were earning well over six figures. And then somehow, you know, newspaper salaries kind of stagnated. I mean, we always got paid pretty well.
Oh, we got paid
but
very
nothing,
well.
But nothing like superstar-type salaries.
When I,
and then football just went bananas.
When I when I got to London, I managed to bump up my salary from 12,500 in Manchester to 15,000 in London. With Struan Cooper.
Yeah.
You know, that nasty, horrible...
Yeah, I never really knew him.
Bent, not bent in a sense of sexual or anything like that, but bent and twisted morally man. He was a horrible little Scots tosser, and he had a little Scots beard.
Yeah, good word to say for anybody, have you?
Well,
I mean, there are very few stories you tell that are pleasant stories and nice stories about people you remember from
what he used to do
Everyone's
is...
a bastard.
Well, what he used to do is he used to be the picture editor, right, and he used to boast in the pub afterwards. He opened his coat and be four different coloured pens. And he'd say, "That's my fiddling kit," you know?
Because
he used to fiddle his expenses enormously.
Well, so everybody.
Yeah, so
you've
what the management.
You've admitted to that before.
Eh?
You've admitted to that before.
Well, creative accountancy. So anyway, so the management thought, he was also FOC, Father of the Chapel.
Yeah.
So the manager thought, we get him on our side. He, A, he knows how to fiddle expenses, and B, he knows what all the guys are up to.
He knows what all the tricks
Double his salary, make him managing editor.
Yeah. Poacher turned gamekeeper.
And gave him a Jaguar. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
I mean, not a chauffeur driven one the editor, but they gave him a Jaguar.
Yeah, I know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Gene Rook also had a Jaguar.
Yeah.
And he became a vile, nasty, you know, objectionable...
Did he ever reject any of your expenses?
...piece of filth. well, he made me pay excessive sometimes. He said, Mr. Parry, I want you to come and see me in my office tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. and you'd better bring your checkbook. Yeah. Because he'd found out that I'd, you know, like been on the fiddle or something, you know, and did that.
And did you ever have to write a check to him then?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Right. Yeah. Anyway, listen, so more figures here to back up my claim.
Yeah.
Rich people are good people.
Well, that's a ridiculous thing to say.
Rich people spread wealth.
That's a ridiculous thing to say.
Rich people create jobs.
That's not necessarily
true. Rich people keep our society up there, not down there. I mean, look at countries like Somalia.
Yeah.
There's no rich people.
Well, there's a few warlords there doing all right.
And that's why it's a dump.
No.
Countries that have got rich people is a good country.
No, it's not.
People with poor people is a bad country.
That's a ridiculously simplistic
way of speaking. No, it's not. It's true. It's true.
No, it's not true.
Australia's got lots of rich people, good country.
The point is that, you know...
Samoa? Hasn't got a lot of rich people. Not such a good country,
well,
okay?
It might be a good country. I've never been to Samoa.
Yeah, well, you've seen the natives there. And,
natives?
Yes.
And you can't talk about people like that.
They are native people
to
Samoa.
No, they're not called natives.
Look.
They're Samoans.
Yes, native
to... We don't
call
them natives.
Native.
You can't call them natives.
I did not call them natives.
What are you, fucking Rudyard Kipling?
No, I'm not calling natives.
We just did.
And if you interpreted that, then I apologise to the native population of Samoa.
We've got a big listenership in Samoa. I've started calling it Samoa now because I used to call it Samoa, but now everybody calls it Samoa.
Samoa,
because apparently you have to say it properly. But here's the point.
Yes.
You can't make sweeping generalisations and say all rich people are great. Because all rich people are not great.
No.
Okay, here's somebody, I'm going to give you an example of a rich person who's not great.
Right.
Robert Maxwell, who was a crook.
Well, he was a crook.
Yeah.
But he wasn't necessarily rich. He stole people's money.
He was rich before he stole money.
Self-made rich people are good people.
He was a self-made rich man. What about old Spencer, you know, Lady Princess Diana's brother?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One of the most odious characters you should ever wish to meet. Right?
I agree. Yeah.
A lot of people... at the time when he made that speech in Westminster Abbey about, you know, looking after the boys.
Yes, we will take the boys into our fold.
More or less blaming the press for killing Diana.
That's right,
absolute scumbag.
Yeah, he
is
a scumbag, I agree.
And sort of chuntered off to South Africa.
He's had two or three
where he
wives,
cheated on
he?
His wife.
Yeah,
Unrelentlessly,
yes,
unrelentingly.
Right. Yes.
And put her in more or less into a fucking clinic, a rehab clinic.
That's right, yeah.
Because he tortured her so much.
Well,
if
I didn't
count
torture,
all thought, he tortured her mentally, I mean. I don't mean he tortured her physically.
That. You say that.
No, he did. Listen, he's a disgusting and foul creature.
Well,
but he's got money. So what does that make your theory? Absolute bollocks.
But his is inherited money.
Well,
I'm talking about self-made people are good.
Well, Maxwell was self-made.
By the way, the row between Bezos and the Prez.
And the National Inquiry.
And the National Inquiry. Now, the bloke on the National Inquiry these days is
he's
a fellow called Pecker.
He's Donald Trump's mate.
Exactly, Pecker.
That's the word.
And so he broke the story about Bezos... from being a lady who was not his wife, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
For which Bezos now has to pay like $120 billion or something.
She used to work for Fox, I think.
That's right, yeah.
He's given his ex $47 billion, I think.
$47 billion, something like that. That's right, yeah. But Bezos blames
all that. But she's going to remain part of the Amazon family.
Part of the Amazon family.
But she's going to retain her place on the board.
Yeah, but Bezos blames Trump for getting Pecker.
Yeah.
That's a very unfortunate
a name,
isn't it? You know, Mr. Pecker.
Because they've got pictures of his Pecker, is apparently what the story's about.
That's right, exactly. They said
but
we can publish pictures
he's
of
already,
this man naked.
But he's already sent pictures of his Pecker to the bird he's now with, hasn't he?
That's right, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, people have seen the pictures of his Pecker already.
Well, somebody's intercepted them, that's for sure.
Right.
Anyway, getting back to the rich here.
Yeah.
Now, it says here, one part of the survey asked whether people would support drastically curtailing the income of well-paid executives and distributing that money among their workers so that each worker received an extra few pounds a month. In Britain, 29% were in favour.
Oh, yeah.
So that's less than one third.
Uh-huh.
In France, the figure was nearly 60%. Now, that's the difference between us and
France,
the French, OK?
They love a bit of communism, don't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah, they certainly do.
Yeah.
They certainly do. And they want to take money off those who work hard and just cause trouble.
Well, they don't do any work at all.
No, they don't do any work.
In France. They don't work on Mondays, basically.
No, that's right,
I remember going there, I think it was maybe on my honeymoon.
Yeah.
We went to Versailles.
That's right.
Palace of Versailles.
Yeah.
Because we'd driven a car all the way up from Nice and we'd stopped at various places.
Yes.
Stopped, funnily enough, at Dudley Freeman's place on the way up. You know,
right, okay, yeah.
Outside of, what was the name of that town he lived near?
Can't remember. He lives in like a...
He lives in a chateau, basically.
Chateau, that's got a courtyard in the middle and all
well,
that
no,
kind of stuff.
Well, no, he's got, we said, when we
he's
went
got
to
a
stay
farm,
there,
hasn't he?
He's got a chapel on the ground.
That's right,
a big swimming pool. He said, you can have this wing.
Yeah.
He gave us the left wing of the house.
That's
you know,
right,
how fucking big it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Poitiers, I think it was near.
Poitiers,
which
yeah.
is just outside of Paris.
Oh, said, oh Dudley, he is a butterfly, yeah, says his wife, because he was shagging Polish immigrants all the time.
Polish library assistants.
Very good-looking library assistants, by the way. When a girl went to Dudley's press cuttings and information service... Yes. They only ever got a job if they were wearing white stiletto heels, short skirts, and had long black hair.
Yeah, it's true.
Amazingly, nobody who worked there looked anything other than that.
No, indeed.
Yeah.
Now,
and they used to fight over him, you know.
They did, yeah.
Used to try and hit each other with stiletto shoes. And when they missed, there were all holes in Dudley's walls and doors where these girls were attacking each other with stilettos over Dudley.
Well, this place he was in was an old hunting lodge used by Louis XIV or something. It was a fantastic place.
Yeah.
Anyway... we got to fucking Versailles, right?
Yeah.
On a Monday. It wasn't open.
Right,
because it's not open on a Monday.
Right,
Nothing's open on a Monday. Yeah. Also, in the middle of, if you go to France in the middle of August, Paris, half the Paris is shut.
Yeah, that's right.
Because
they've
all taken August off.
So, how does France still retain its place as fifth or sixth biggest economy in the world?
I think they must have a load of money coming from Europe. I mean, it must be the only reason that they have money.
Because
it's all been given to them by the Europeans. Because they don't have particularly high levels of tax.
I'm not sure if we did the story or not, but I meant to do it if we didn't do it. There's a fucking baker in somewhere like Nantes or somewhere like that, decided to open his bakery 6 days a week instead of five.
No.
Fucking riots on the streets.
Yeah, they
had the riots on the streets. Riot, you know, got along this, you know. And by the way, the yellow vests are rioting every weekend, but it's become so commonplace in France now, they don't even report on it in the English newspapers anymore or on English television.
I'm told, I think I'm right in saying this, that I'm told they're not allowed by law to receive or read emails after 5 o'clock. If they're at work, you know, any work-related stuff.
That's right.
They're not allowed to look
at it. You can't pester your employees by asking them to read these after work.
You can't ring them outside of work.
So how come France is still a prosperous country? Because all that sort of attitude pervades in Italy as well.
Yeah.
But Italy, of course, is a basket case economy.
Well, they've got a massive problem.
Massive, but they're still about the 9th or 10th biggest economy in the world, believe it or not.
Yeah, yeah. Because, but they're all in massive debt, though, and presumably France is the same.
absolutely.
So your trickle-down theory doesn't work.
Well, it only doesn't work because they waste what they've got.
No, there's plenty of rich people in France.
Of course, there's plenty of rich. There's some rich companies in France. Mm. Although God knows how, because state control of companies is so massive.
Yeah.
You know, corporation tax 90% and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they tried to cut corporation tax to get people to move back there from London. No way. Talking about Dudley, by the way.
Yeah.
Dudley was such a shagger. It was unbelievable. I mean, not only was he, you know, rogerising all these ladies in his office, but he told me once, he used to work for the Sunday Express in England.
Yeah. He used to work in Germany, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Did he?
Used to be I think he used to be the Berlin correspondent for the Express.
Oh, really? Could have been, yeah.
And he had a brother, I think, who was still in Germany.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, well, anyway, he was such an attractive guy, you know, such a great companion over lunch and all that. And what happened was, he told me this great story when he worked on the Sunday Express. Yeah. Mondays, nobody worked on this, but he worked in the north, and he used to go and collect all these... weekly newspapers, and then sit in a pub for hours, and you do find great
just
stories
through,
in local weekly newspapers.
Yeah, yeah.
The sort of stories in those days that Sunday Express wanted.
Right.
It would be a row over the village green at the bowling club or something like that, you know, and, you know, the Lord of the Manor was at war with the guy who ran the local, you know, taxi service or something, you know.
Right.
And he said he really picked up barmaids because he went to a different pub every week.
Right.
And he said... and he had quite a nice car, because he made quite a lot of money, Dudley. He was quite enterprising. And he said on one occasion he was having sex with one of these barmaids in a lay-by in his car.
Right.
And she was she was bending over the back seat, right? And Dudley was...
Well, he was in the front seat, was he?
Well, they put the front seat down.
Oh, OK.
So they put the front passenger seat down, so it was almost like a flat bed type thing on a plane.
Yeah.
But she was grabbing the back seat, so her face was looking out the back window, right? So Dudley, you know, was, like, behind her.
Manoeuvring.
Yeah, behind her. And he remember telling me. So, you know, they were active in what they were doing. And she said... I think we'd better stop now. And he said, no, no, I'm going to stop. Yeah. She said, no, I think we better have. And he said, why? She said, my husband's car's just pulled into the lane. He said, what? What? You know? But Dudley was very able. He's a very able man.
Yeah, yeah.
And he managed to somehow... you know, get his trousers up, you know, right. And leapt out the car, ran towards her husband's car with his arm outstretched and said, hello, right. How are you? Great to see you, you right. know. And made up some ridiculous right. bullshit story right. about, you know, how his wife had local knowledge about right. this story in the local weekly newspaper right. and all that.
Right.
Because the husband had apparently gone to the pub right. to pick her up after a shift finished at 3 o'clock, right. you know, because all pubs closed at 3 o'clock in yeah. those days, you know what I mean? Right. And was told by, you know, somebody else, well, no, she's already left. When is she left? Oh, yeah, she went away with that chap who, what? What sort of car's he got? Yeah. I think Dudley had a Jaguar or amazing. Something. This bloke that's then amazing. Drives around the country lane, right. look, finds Dudley's right. car, and I said,
that was a very lucky escape.
Did he kill you?
Yeah.
He said, no. He said, I managed to talk my way out of it.
Right.
But, I mean, that must have been quite a shocking moment.
That is a very lucky escape.
Quite a shocking
Absolutely.
Moment.
Absolutely. So
right, now I'll tell you what I want to talk to you about, okay?
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about Valentine's Day, because, of course, it is this week, all right?
No, it isn't.
What?
Well, by the time this goes out, it won't be Valentine's Day.
No, it has been this week. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I see.
Because I don't want to talk to you about Valentine's Day.
Right.
I want to talk to you about another day,
right,
which has been marketed and had been marketing underground.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called Mistress's Day.
Mistress's Day?
On February the 13th.
What?
February the 13th.
February the 13th?
February the 13th.
Well, the day before Valentine's.
Yes, Mistress's Day.
Well, is that when you're supposed to take your mistress out?
Yeah. Because
well, you know, I never did that.
You know the way it goes. You know the way. You never did that?
No.
You're admitting now to shocking behaviour
well, no.
within your marriage, eh?
Well, I'm just
eh?
Saying that, you know, there yeah. were times when there was more than yeah. one of us in the marriage,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was doubled up on Valentine's, basically.
You always doubled up on Valentine's, yeah. I suppose you would. What I was going to say is that you have to keep your mistress happy, because if
How
you
do
don't...
Know?
Well, I've heard all these stories. I've
well,
heard all these
had
stories.
A long string of married women, didn't you?
That's a bit of okay.
So what did you do on Valentine's Day with them?
Usually put an advert in the Times.
Oh, yeah, I've
which
heard
I've told
those.
You about before, you know.
Yeah, roses so, are red, violets are blue.
Yes.
What was it?
I
can't wait to get your lingerie off of you, or something like that.
It wasn't quite, wasn't quite like that. I think it was roses,
it was
red, violets
like
are blue. Something like
you look great in lingerie.
No, it was something. No. That wasn't that crude. Something like
it was
you
pretty
know,
fucking crude.
A body stocking really suits you, I think.
A
it
body
was.
Stocking,
yeah, or something like that. You know what
that
I mean?
Sounds quite sinister.
No. You know what I'm talking about.
Do you mean those all in one thing?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Is that what
yeah.
you used to wear?
Well, I'm not going into it. You know, it's this is personal details that I'm not going to get involved in.
I've never seen anybody actually wearing one of those.
Oh, yeah, no.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, the point of my story is...
Yeah, what is
story
the
is, when you were younger, of course, in the first flush of love, did
yeah.
you get big Valentine's cards from the lady you were going out with at the time?
Big Valentine's
yeah.
cards?
Yeah.
What do you mean, big?
Well, I mean huge, in boxes, in
oh.
white boxes, you know what I mean?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I mean, when I was first going out with girls, I was about 16, 17.
Yeah.
Right, none of us really had very much money.
No.
I don't think
no.
so. I mean,
well, women used to love me so much, they'd spend, like, their week's wages from working in
right.
British Home Stores on my on
well,
my Valentine's
card. Quid.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, no, I mean, I was very good at giving gifts, because I always had a bit of money.
Yeah,
I
did
always
as well.
I always had a job.
I bought one of my girlfriends when I was about 17. I bought her a coat for £26.
Wow. I remember buying.
And you couldn't
one
believe
my,
it. That's like spending.
Yeah.
That's like spending £400 on a coat
yeah.
now. Yeah.
I remember
yeah.
buying a ring for
yeah.
one of my girlfriends
yeah.
in a sort
yeah.
of an ancient.
What's it called? An eternity ring.
It wasn't no, but it was like a. It was what do you call those estate rings? You know, like it's not a modern ring. It's called an estate ring because it's an old ring.
Yeah, I don't know.
But there are some shop, some people who hold those much better, and they think they're nicer
yeah.
to get.
Yeah.
So it was a. I remember it was an emerald ring.
Mm.
But it was an old setting, you know, so it
right.
was kind of like Victorian times
yeah.
or something. It was
okay.
35 quid, as I remember.
35
and
quid, a
I
lot.
Remember
in those days.
In those days, it
wow.
was in the
that
like
was
late
a lot
70s.
A lot of money.
It was a lot of money.
Lot
I
of
only
money.
Used to make, I think I used to make around about 7 or 8 quid a day.
Wow.
When I was working in the bakery. So it was literally like five...
Yeah,
days
week's wages, yeah.
A week's wages, practically.
Well, not bad. Anyway, look, that just takes me on to something I saw this morning,
oh, yeah.
which has been very un-Valentine-ish, and that is that apparently there is an explosion of sex in the suburbs.
You seem obsessed with sex lately. People have been
no.
asking me,
yeah.
why is Porky so obsessed with sex?
No, I'm not.
It's all
not.
He talks about.
No,
sex and
stories.
Torture.
No.
Sex and torture.
Why do you think
your
during our tabloid
subjects?
Career
yeah.
we always concentrated on showbiz, sex or football? Because they all sold.
Well,
okay?
I didn't always do that. And neither did you.
I did. Anyway, look, let me tell you.
Go on.
There's this couple in Manchester
oh.
who have now been ordered by the High Court to close down two of their establishments
oh, yeah.
because they've decided they can now officially be described as houses of ill repute.
What do you mean, brothels?
Well, I think you're on the right. Really? I didn't want to use that word, but right. I think you're on the right.
Well, I mean, there are brothels around, aren't there?
Yeah, but they're in nice suburban places like Prestwick in Manchester.
Prestwick?
Yeah.
I thought it was in Scotland.
No, there's a Prestwick in Manchester.
Is there?
Yeah. Northenden, you know, places like this.
I don't know any of these places.
Now, what I was going to tell you was, I first came across this salacious behaviour when I was the executive editor of the Red Top Tabloid, okay?
Which Red Top Tabloid?
The Sun.
Oh, right. What do you mean?
Well, what happened was...
What were you doing in Manchester?
No, I wasn't in Manchester. No, this was when I was in London. But we found out that a lot of this was going on in the suburbs, right? So we decided to run a series called Sex in the Suburbs.
Oh, yeah.
I recruited a guy called Chris, who was the most brilliant underground tabloid reporter you've ever come across. And what we did was we would set up these dating agencies in places like Warwick and Hereford and Shrewsbury.
Oh, yeah.
And there were false dating agencies, but see whether anybody in the locality...
Fake news.
But see if anybody in the locality bit.
Right. Signed up.
Yeah.
Did you have, like, women on these dating sites?
They were all reporters. They were all our reporters.
I mean, I suppose this is the days before the internet, so you couldn't have it online.
Really. No. You put, like, adverts in local newspapers and all this kind of stuff, you know? So anyway, you couldn't believe, you know, you put one advert in a local newspaper, you know, mature lady, you know, wishes to, you know, meet, you know, men and all that kind
mature
of stuff.
Mature lady?
Yeah, mature lady and all that kind of
Who's
stuff.
Who's playing her? You don't have to give a name. Anybody I know?
I know a name.
Who was it?
He was Ingrid.
Ingrid?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. But anyway, so what happened is, you know, we heard the expression about our reporter made his excuses and left. Well, this was our reporter made her excuses and left the room. But before she left the room, we had a photographer and a reporter in the wardrobe, okay?
Isn't that entrapment?
No, not at all.
Well,
not at all.
If there's any money involved...
Yes.
Is there money involved?
No money ever changed hands.
Did the person who came to the room pay money for the service of... using the dating agency?
That was to be paid afterwards, but it never got to that. We were just trying to hook the fish, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Well, that seems a bit unfair.
No.
You're just looking for innocent blokes, basically, who are looking for a bit of fun. And you're going to expose them in the national press.
That's right, cheating on their
that's
wives.
That's pretty horrible.
No, it's not. No.
Why would you do that?
That's what people did in those days. I wouldn't do it now. Why not? Well, I do think it's just slightly despicable.
Well, it's very despicable.
But anyway, so so Chris, who was the guy in the wardrobe, he was brilliant. And the photographer would usually be outside the room to get pictures of the people going in and out. Didn't want too much detail in the room.
Nobody could see him, though. He must have been hiding somewhere else.
He would be in a cupboard in the corridor, you see what I mean, with a hole in the cupboard and all that, you know.
Well, where did you get the property from?
Oh, you'd rent it. You just rent a flat, you know what I mean?
Sounds like a very expensive operation, this.
We had loads of money in those days. Tons and tons of money. The biggest generator of money in the commercial world of journalism in those days were tabloid newspapers, who had tens of millions of pounds to spare, okay? Right. We used to do things like... go to Cadbury's and pay them £1 million for the exclusive first takes of the new Cadbury's Milk Tray Man advert, OK? Right. And we didn't even have a video of it.
Yeah.
They were just still prints, you know what I mean? We used to buy up books that, you know, nobody was going to publish, just so no other paper could publish them. And we would take them.
It was so much cash going through the business because the circulation was so high.
That's right.
And so many papers were being sold.
I mean, Rupert Murdoch was the greatest press baron of the modern era. And he worked out that if you charge 20p for a paper every day and it sells 4 million copies, you've got an awful lot of ready cash every day, which you can then invest in other businesses.
Well, it's
and
one of the few cash businesses that produces that kind of money. You know?
Of course, and he was able then to use his tabloid newspapers as a cash cow to launch Sky TV, for instance, which was sold recently for something like 27 million, a billion, billion quid from nothing. I mean, that's the way Mr. Murdoch did it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point I was going to make is this guy, Chris, was so brilliant because just as the client, we'll call them, okay, and our sort of planted a reporter, female, was about to get down to it, Chris would leap out of the wardrobe. you know, just kick the door open and leap out of the wardrobe.
Right.
Did not shock the bloke who was in the room.
You're lucky somebody didn't die of a heart attack.
Well, that's right.
You're somebody of an elderly nature.
No, it's absolutely true. And do you know what? Most of them thought Chris was from the Inland Revenue. Seriously.
Really?
The first question was always, oh, are you from the Inland Revenue?
Right.
You know, because...
Yeah, because they always hide in wardrobes.
Exactly.
How bizarre.
No. Come on, give it up now. Yeah. You know, go.
But then, would any of them then, like, give their story or something? Or give their consent? They'd have to give their consent, surely.
No, they give their consent, but I mean, what you did then is you told the whole story and you blacked their face out, you know what I mean? But
did you got
where they came from and all that kind of stuff. Right. They didn't cooperate. They threatened to go round and, you know, we take their driving licence off them. We told you, sometimes, I have to say, they used
to say... It's a despicable story.
It's a despicable story. Sometimes... they would pretend to be a police officer and, you know, they'd be from the morality squad. You know what I mean?
What, you mean the guy jumping out of the wardrobe?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm from morality.
Well, that is illegal, impersonating a police officer.
No, never said that. Listen, they'd just say, I'm from the morality squad.
Yeah.
Give me a driving licence, you know.
Morality squad.
That's right, yeah. But poor old Chris, he was one of the best reporters I've ever worked with, right? Yeah. He was fearless. He did all that
kind
of stuff.
It's a waste of everybody's time, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, in the end, it's bullshit.
Well, no.
So, you know, big wow. There's people, you know, having extramarital sex.
Yeah, but it was called Sex in the Suburbs. It was.
You could have just made it all up with models, couldn't you?
No. Because
you didn't have to launch some kind of sting operation.
No, we did, because
hotel.
We had to have actual people who got into it and did it and all that kind of stuff. Some guys...
You could have just gone to a brothel, couldn't
some
you?
Guys didn't mind and said, yeah, I don't mind you taking my picture. Mm. Seriously, because they were divorced or something like that, you know, and they're looking for a bit on...
Do you know, I've told you this story, I'm sure, before, but we were talking in one of the previous episodes about my trip to Marbella.
Yeah.
And that's the only time I've ever been in a brothel in my entire life.
Right. Yeah.
Was when
I've never been in one.
Well, I was working.
Right.
And we were looking for this woman, the Home Alone woman.
Yeah.
And basically, we'd gone down there mob-handed. The sun had an early start on it, as they always did.
Yeah.
But we'd all basically met in Sinatra's bar and decided to fan out across sort of the southern
Lineker's Spain. Lineker's brother ran one in the same street.
Lineker's brother was down the road.
That's right, yeah.
But Sinatra's was the sort of place that
really
went to.
That's right, it was,
Anyway, so our sort of patch, if you like, was some particular section of sort of from Puerto Banús down towards Malaga.
Yes.
And so I don't know how we found it out. And I'm always wondering about this, is when we worked in those days.
Yes.
I have no idea how we got information, but we fucking got it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And we somehow found that there was a brothel in the middle of this forest.
Right. In the middle of a forest.
It was in the middle of a forest. I remember driving there.
I don't remember a forest
it was
near Puerto Banús, but anyway,
well, it's not in
inland.
Puerto Banús. It's inland. And it's between there and Malaga, right? And we drove around for a while, up a few mountains. And I don't know how the fuck we knew where it was. Anyway, we found this place.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, I was able to do the immortal thing where you walk in with a picture of this woman.
That's right,
And I walked in, and these beautiful, they're very beautiful girls.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of, you know, opened the door, come in. I said, I'm looking for a woman. And they went, you've come to the right place.
Yeah.
I said, no, not that sort of woman. Yeah. I'm looking for this woman. And I showed them the picture because we thought she might be working as a hooker.
Yeah.
And they didn't know who she was.
No.
And we said, look, well, I'll tell you what, we don't want any services for her, but we'll sit down, have a drink, have a chat, and give them some money.
Yes.
And there was a guy in the corner, I kid you not. Everything was red, right? All the walls were red, the carpet was red, the bar was red. There's a guy in the corner playing the organ, like something out of... Do you remember that Michael Miles show? Not Opportunity Knocks, but...
Open the box. Yeah.
Do you remember they used to go... He was playing a fucking organ like that.
Yeah, like... Sort of high
and we went to talk
resonance,
to this guy.
Drama and all that. Yeah.
And we went to talk to him, and he was from Oldham.
What are you fucking doing here?
It was the most amazing and bizarre thing I think I've ever done.
And me and
Frankie Barrett walked out of there.
Yeah,
and I said, I don't think I'll ever walk into another brothel and be able to say I'm looking for a woman.
No.
And it's the only one I've ever been in.
Yeah.
And there was, and apparently the rooms were sort of behind this bar.
Yeah.
And these girls kept coming out and saying, are you sure? And they were stroking your hand. I was like, no, listen, we're not interested.
Fine.
Honestly, we're really
not
interested. We don't mind paying you some money for your time. And we'll talk to you, but we don't want to shag you.
I went there to do a story once, and it was a great story. It was about... you know, the Spanish terrorists blowing up beaches to keep British tourists away.
Mm.
And I met a guy from England, an amazing guy, because as soon as he found... found out I was English and I was from there, you know, we used his as a base. And I said, how did you get started here? He said, I came out here as a beach bum.
Yeah.
And he said, but I realised that this would be paradise if I could get enough money together to open a bar.
Right.
He said, everybody comes out here, the girls want to work here. He said, fantastic. And he had he had three or four bars now. And I said, how did you make your first one? He said, you know what I did? He said, I took the lease on an empty property. He said, and I called it Ye Olde King's Head.
Right.
So I had to turn it into a timbered building, right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like an old pub in England.
Yeah.
He said, but I didn't have any money to do anything except, you know, try and convince people to come here. So he said, one night, me and a mate went and we stole something like 30 beams of wood from a building site nearby. Okay.
Right.
And he'd been there a couple of days earlier to ask about buying the wood.
Right.
But it they couldn't afford it. It was too expensive. You know, he said, I haven't got much money. Can I buy it now and pay you later? Right. And they said, no, gringo, you know, fuck off and all that, you know. So, yeah. So he went
like
back.
Like a spaghetti western.
Yeah, he went back that night with his mate. They used wire cutters. They stole 30 in.
Right.
They went back and they got back at 1 o'clock in the morning. By the time the police arrived at 7 a.m., they had bolted all the beams on the wall, turned them into medieval, painted them, reshaped them, and everything. And the police came in and they searched every room looking for wood and didn't realise it was already on the wall.
Amazing.
He was a great guy.
Yeah.
And then he made money. And he said years later he actually paid the money back for the beams that he'd stolen. Yeah. He was that sort of guy, you know what I mean?
What a gent.
Yeah, exactly. What a great guy.
Mike Perry mate.
What a great guy.
Scumbag. Yeah.
So there we are, another great story.
Indeed, with two mics.
Rich people are good people.
Well, that's rich a ridiculous thing to
rich
say.
Rich people spread wealth.
That's a ridiculous thing.
Rich people
thing to
create
say.
Jobs.
That's not necessarily
rich people
true.
Keep our society up there, not down there. I mean, look at countries like Somalia.
Yeah.
There's no rich people.
Well, there's a few warlords there doing it right.
And that's why it's a dump.
No.
Countries that have got rich people is a good country.
No, it's not.
People with
it's
poor
not,
people
no.
is a bad
that's
country.
That's a ridiculously simplistic
No, it's not. It's
way
true.
Of speaking.
It's true.
No, it's not true.
Australia's got lots of rich people,
well,
good country.
The point is that, you know.
Samoa hasn't got a lot of rich people. Not such a good country,
well,
okay?
It might be a good country. I've never been to Samoa.
Yeah, well, you've seen the natives there. And,
natives?
Yes.
And you can't talk about people like that.
They are native people
no,
to Samoa.
No, they're not called natives.
Look.
They're Samoans.
Yes, native
well, you don't
to...
call them natives.
Native.
You can't call them natives.
I did not call them
what,
native.
What, are you fucking Rudyard Kipling?
No, I'm not calling them natives.
We just
if,
did.
And if you interpreted that, then I apologise to the native population
We've got
of Samoa.
We've got a big listenership in Samoa.
Sort of planted a reporter,
yeah.
female, was about to get down to it, Chris would leap out of the wardrobe. You know, just kick the door open and leap out of the wardrobe.
Right.
Did not shock the bloke who was
well,
in the room.
Did, you know, you're lucky somebody would die of a heart attack.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah.
Somebody of an elderly nature.
No, it's absolutely true. And do you know what? Most of them thought Chris was from the Inland Revenue. seriously.
Really?
The first question was always, oh, are you from the Inland Revenue?
Right.
You know, because...
Yeah, because they always hide in wardrobes.
Exactly.
How bizarre.
No. No, gringo, you know, fuck off and all that, you know.